Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, February 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we finish up this week on Bang the Book Radio. One guest joins me on the program. That is Greg Peterson from the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast. We'll chat with him, obviously, about college basketball as we head on into a very, very busy weekend on the college hardwood. But as far as today's first segment goes, I'm going to fly solo. I'm going to do a grab bag segment here, talk some Major League Baseball, talk some NBA, talk some college basketball, and some NHL. Obviously, the latter three, I'll kind of preview for the weekend here. But as far as the baseball side of things goes, still working on all of that Major League Baseball season win total stuff. We'll have division futures, pennant futures, individual player futures for MVP, Cy Young, and Home Run King, assuming those are out by the time I start getting everything up and by the time I send that PDF out for everybody to have everything all in one place. But working a lot on the baseball stuff, so I got some things to talk about with that. Also take a look, like I said, at the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL for this weekend. And over at bangthebook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We cover all that over there at the website. Daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels, NBA, college basketball, and NHL situational betting spot articles for me. Those go up every Sunday evening. We've got college basketball previews of the day, NBA previews of the day, Alan Moody, Admir Aljic, and myself covering all that stuff for you. We're going to have some stuff here coming up for the XFL. I put up an article on Wednesday. Charles Jay is going to cover some XFL for us with some more detailed individual game previews. We've got UFC 247 preview, golf every week from James Mazzola, tennis every week from Big Ten Watto, soccer previews from Admir Aljic, NASCAR rolling back around here soon as well. So plenty of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it all out. Make sure you keep it tuned over there. Always something good for you to check out that will hopefully help you with your handicapping process. And everything you read over at bangthebook.com, well, take it out over to DSI Sportsbook, where you can use that BTB200 promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. And they, of course, are the sponsor here of Bang the Book Radio. All right, so with that, I'm going to fly solo here, like I said, for the first 25, 30 minutes or so here of the show. I'm going to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball stuff, NBA, college basketball, and NHL. Then we'll chat with Greg Peterson, and then we'll send you on your way on into the weekend. But we start in the Major League Baseball world, and we talked a little bit about it on Wednesday's show with Brian Leonard, but that massive Mookie Betts trade, that three-team deal that it was actually being held up a little bit right now, that the Red Sox kind of worried about the medicals for Bruce Star Graterol, the pitcher that they got from Minnesota in that trade. I think eventually everything goes through. But as we look at Boston here, adjusted season win total over at BetOnline, 85.5 minus 130 on the under. And you know, I figured Mookie Betts and David Price would probably be about a three-win adjustment for the Red Sox. Maybe you could say it's kind of 3.5 given the juice that's on that number. But we talked about this on Wednesday with Brian Leonard, and something worth mentioning here once again is that, you know, just because Mookie Betts is a 9 or 10 WAR player doesn't mean he's worth 9 or 10 wins to the Red Sox. That's what his mark is over a replacement player. And, you know, Boston still has a pretty solid team overall. Obviously, the ceiling looks quite a bit different without a guy like Mookie Betts. And you know, the rotation has some question marks, too, now without David Price. So we'll see how low this thing continues to go. But again, keep in mind that some teams win the offseason, some teams lose the offseason. And there are some very big adjustments that happen as a result out there in the season win total betting market. And right now, we're not getting a whole lot of investment in that market because we've got a lot of college basketball stuff going on. People are more interested in putting their money into the college basketball futures, into daily NBA and NHL betting. They're kind of waiting to see what happens here with the XFL a little bit. And also, too, look, I mean, you bet a season win total. You know this as well as I do in any sports market that's out there. You wait 6 or 8 months for that bet to be graded. So that's money that you don't have liquid. That's money that you don't have in your bankroll to go out and play these things. And a lot of people won't bet season win totals because of that, because they want to be a little bit more liquid and a little bit more fluid with their bankrolls. Now, I can tell you a few things. First of all, get yourself in the mindset or structure your bankroll to be able to play some of these futures propositions, because you're talking about a 162 game sample size in Major League Baseball where you've got some margin for error. You've got some room to fall on the wrong side of variance and still be okay. Some of these teams will come nowhere close to their win total line. Others will be right on it or very, very close. So when you talk about single game betting, it's a higher variance environment. Yeah, you know exactly who's going to pitch and who's going to be in the lineup, and that's great. But it's still a higher variance environment because every team generally wins 60 games and loses 60 games. And you could be on a team that winds up losing one of those games that they shouldn't. So I think the season-long betting market does make a lot of sense with these win totals. I think it makes a lot of sense to be willing to lock that bankroll up a little bit and take some positions on these things if you feel really strongly about them. And to me, there are several that I feel pretty strongly about here early on in my writing process. And, you know, I'll have conclusions for all of these in that season win total guide at bangthebook.com. But there are some that I like. There are some that are already juiced on the sides that I like. And that kind of is what it is. You know, you don't worry so much about closing line value with a bet that lasts 162 games as you would with a one-night standalone type of game. So while I'm getting the guide out a lot earlier than I usually do, if you're not comfortable betting these in mid-February because the season is still over a month away, that's fine. But you're going to get some ideas on what my thoughts are, kind of get some ideas on where I expect the market to sort of go. Then you can kind of go from there. So the Mookie Betts deal, obviously earth-shattering, a big type of move. I like to look at the potential impacts of smaller moves, smaller signings, you know, things like, you know, maybe it's not a smaller move necessarily, but the Reds, you know, they acquire Nick Castellanos. They wind up signing him and opt out after the first year of the deal, but 4 years, $64 million. And, you know, that's a team that may be without Eugenio Suarez early on in the season. He's coming back from shoulder surgery. So Castellanos fills a little bit of an offensive void. Once Suarez gets back, they're that much better. And I just wrote about the Reds today with the first draft of my preview. And you also have to look at what these teams are replacing. And for example, looking specifically at Cincinnati here, you know, they add in a Nick Castellanos. They add in a Mike Moustakas. They add in Shogo Akiyama. And we don't know exactly what Akiyama is going to do coming over from Japan. But based on the guys that got a lot of plate appearances for them last year, he should be an upgrade. You know, Jose Iglesias, third in plate appearances for the Reds last year, 84 WRC plus, which means he was 16% below league average offensively. Nick Senzel, a lot of plate appearances, a 90 weighted runs created plus, 10% below the league average in that department. Castellanos is an upgrade over Yasiel Puig, who was also in that 90 WRC plus range. Jose Peraza played 141 games, 403 plate appearances for this team with a 62 WRC plus. So 38% below league average offensively. He's replaced by Mike Moustakas, who's an above average offensive player. So when I look through the win totals here, I look at all of the potential upgrades, all of the potential downgrades, and I grade them in the aggregate to see if I think that team will exceed these season win total expectations or fall short of them. So it's not just that the Dodgers got Mookie Betts. It's who does Mookie Betts replace on that team? Whose plate appearances does he wind up taking? And it certainly looks like at this point in time with the trade of Jock Peterson to Anaheim, he takes over for Jock Peterson. Well, Jock Peterson was a pretty good hitter against right-handed pitching. He was one of those guys that definitely falls on the platoon side of things. So when you talk about the Dodgers, when you talk about a team that was already going to be exceptional, again, their season win total now 100.5. They were already going to be very, very good. Jock Peterson last year was 27% above league average offensively, hit 36 home runs, was a 3-win player. So is Mookie Betts a better player? Yes. But what is the quantifiable impact of Betts taking over for an above average player? What is the difference of Betts, an elite player, against a very good player in Jock Peterson? That's what I try to figure out here with these season win total write-ups, and also what you should be doing in your preseason research. You know, it's not like you know, Mookie Betts goes to a team like the Indians where he replaces some guy in the outfield who, you know, is probably doubling as a parking attendant. No, Betts replaces a guy who already was an above average major league player. So what is the tangible impact of that? Well, over a full season, maybe Betts helps you to two or three more victories. But there's a difference of six wins above replacement player. That's not the actual difference that we're going to see. So I think it's a really important distinction to make here when you talk about evaluating transactions in Major League Baseball. You look at somebody like Anthony Rendon, for example, who's going to be taking over at third base for the Anaheim Angels. Well, what did the Angels do last year at third base? It wasn't Anthony Rendon. It was not a player remotely close to Anthony Rendon. So that's one where the impact is much greater, is a lot more tangible for a team like the Angels and with a player like Anthony Rendon. You know, last year it was David Fletcher who wound up playing third base, played pretty well. Tommy La Stella was good over at third base also. But now one of those guys transitions over to playing second base. So you upgrade at second base and you upgrade at third base. So now that you do something like that, or maybe Fletcher even winds up playing the outfield a little bit, maybe Justin Upton isn't able to stay healthy, something like that. You're talking about multi-position upgrades for the Angels. Jock Peterson is an upgrade. Rendon is an upgrade. La Stella or Fletcher playing second base is an upgrade. So again, in the aggregate, you start talking about a lot better of a situation for the Angels. So in terms of evaluating these offseason transactions in Major League Baseball, that's what I'm looking to do. I'm seeing, is it an improvement over what was there and to what degree? And then subsequently, if a guy that played pretty well now gets moved to another position, a below average player gets moved to the bench or maybe got released or something like that, that's really where you gain all of your value from a Major League Baseball season win total standpoint. Along with, of course, looking at an individual player level for guys that, you know, should improve, maybe will regress a little bit. So again, that's the work that I'm doing on the baseball side. And that's work that you can do too. You know, FanGraphs makes it easy. You know, Baseball Reference makes it easy. A lot of phenomenal statistical resources out there for baseball. So if you're not an NBA guy, if you're not a college basketball guy, if you're not an NHL guy, start working on baseball, because I think that season win total market is something that you can take advantage of. I think having a lot of that research, although it didn't help me as much last season as it has in previous seasons, like having that level of research done can give you a really big leg up. So that's what I'm looking to do with my season win totals. And again, that guide will probably come out, I would say, in its entirety in about 2 weeks' time here. You know, that would be February 21st. I'm hoping to get it out a little bit earlier than that. But I think that, you know, within the next 12 to 14 days, I'm going to have all my win totals posted. Going to have a lot of that future stuff posted. So definitely worth your while to keep an eye out for that over at bangthebook.com. But obviously, in the meantime, we've got sports that are going on here. And the NBA, a very, very busy day on Thursday. A flurry of trade activity. A ton of trade activity out there with the NBA trade deadline at 3 o'clock. So many deals, so many guys on the move. D'Angelo Russell and Andrew Wiggins with a change of scenery. The Clippers getting Marcus Morris. They're getting a little bit more depth. The Cavs get Andre Drummond because, you know, they're making a lot of different financial decisions and trying to free up some cap space and all that kind of thing. Huge deal between the Heat and the Grizzlies. Then you've also got Minnesota in that deal. Guys like Deion Waiters, Justice Winslow, James Johnson, Andre Iguodala, Solomon Hill, Jay Crowder. A lot of guys that start, a lot of rotation types of players, good sixth men, stuff like that. This weekend in the NBA, I think, is pretty difficult because, you know, even though we talked about it on Thursday with John Ryan, you know, there are some teams that did get a lot better. It still takes a little bit of time when you only have five guys out there on the floor at the same time to get everybody to gel, to get everybody on the same page, to get everybody acclimated. And again, keep in mind here, too, when you talk about trade deadlines, these guys are human. They're moving families. They're moving kids. They're moving away from people. They're moving away from friends, maybe longtime teammates, stuff like that. It takes a little bit of time. Yeah, we say it's a business. And the players always say, well, you know, it's just part of the business, this and that. It is. It definitely is. But again, these guys are still human. And we do have to sort of wonder, you know, how they're going to handle some of these different situations. But as far as some situational spots that you know, I had my eye on this week going into the trade deadline and looking at the week as a whole. You know, you have an obvious spot here, Portland and Utah. You know, Portland's been absolutely excellent here of late. Damian Lillard has played very, very well, but Portland's in a tough spot. They play tonight against the San Antonio Spurs. Very, very big game on Thursday night, excuse me, recording this on Thursday night, by the way. Portland and San Antonio, those two teams are right next to each other in the Western Conference standings. And Portland trying to make up some ground here. As we know, they got off to a very, very difficult start. But they play in Utah coming up on Friday night. And they just played in Denver. So this is kind of like a interrupted altitude double. I think that's kind of a difficult spot to be in. And also, you've got Utah looking for some revenge, lost by 17 earlier this week against Portland. So Utah's looking for revenge, Portland in a bad back-to-back. And yeah, generally speaking, a lot of those spots do wind up getting priced into the number, but sometimes not enough. Sometimes not to the correct degree. So that may be one of those spots with Utah and Portland. You've got a rapid revenge angle. You've got a back-to-back angle. You've got Portland really living on what Damian Lillard has been able to do for them. And that's tough. You know, we talked about that on Thursday with John Ryan, about the teams that do really well that have a lot of double-digit scorers. If you're very dependent on a couple of players and they're off, that makes it very difficult for you. And they could very well be off in a back-to-back with travel in a bit of a difficult spot. So Utah definitely on my radar here for Friday night. Another interesting one here on Saturday, the Brooklyn Nets and the Toronto Raptors. Obviously, the Brooklyn Nets, they've had their fair share of problems here throughout the course of the season. They've had some injuries. They just haven't been overly cohesive, but they're starting to get some guys back. They're still, you know, firmly entrenched in that playoff picture right now with the 7 seed. They take on Toronto. And it's always interesting to me when you've got a team that goes on the road and they get to sit and wait it out on Friday night while the team that they're playing has to fly back in from a back-to-back. That's Toronto on Saturday night. They play the Pacers on Friday. Then the Nets, who, you know, again, have had some time to kind of sit around. These two teams do play again on Wednesday, this time in Brooklyn. But, you know, for the Nets here, maybe they go out. Maybe they party a little bit too much in Toronto. That's certainly a possibility. But they're in their hotel rooms on Friday night waiting on Toronto. Toronto, meanwhile, playing a game, traveling back in. You go back home, you know, the kids wake you up early Saturday morning, or you got to run some kind of errand or something like that. You're not exactly fully focused on that game. Brooklyn, on the other hand, is. You know, they're already in town. They're away from their families. They're not worried about it. They FaceTime. They go to bed. They get up. They have lunch. They maybe do a shoot around or something like that. They go play the game. I think those are spots that really do benefit the road team. So I do like Brooklyn a little bit in that matchup there on Saturday night against Toronto. One other one in the NBA for this week, and that is on Sunday here. The Clippers and the Cavaliers. The Clippers will not play their full roster. They're in a back-to-back. Kawhi won't play, especially against the very pathetic Cavs. The Clippers next week play Philadelphia and Boston going into the All-Star break. Now, we talked about this on Wednesday with Brian Leonard that, you know, the Cavaliers, when they play teams that they can beat, they don't really show up. When they play teams that they can't beat, they show up, they cover the number, they kind of hang around, they sort of save face a little bit. What happens in this spot where they take on a Clippers team that, you know, won't be playing everybody, and Los Angeles will still be a very clear, very big favorite on the road in this game, but does the fact that the Clippers aren't playing their full complement of players keep the Cavaliers from being invested in this game? I think that's a possibility. And again, keep in mind here too that, you know, when you're on a really good team and you're a bench player, you're a part-time type of guy, and you get a chance in that spotlight, I think that means something to you. I think you want to go out there and either prove yourself for more minutes or get into a better situation next year, maybe get a new free agent contract where you can start for somebody. I think the Clippers are in a good spot here on Sunday. Again, obviously back-to-back, they're going to have some guys that don't play, but because of the situation, because of what we've seen from the Cavaliers here, the Clippers can walk through this game and still cover the number. But I think motivated guys coming off the bench, playing a bigger role, I got something that does keep Los Angeles a little bit more focused here in this one. So I do like them a little bit here in that game on Sunday. Transitioning over to the college basketball side of things here, a lot of games in my situational article for Saturday. A lot of really interesting games, too, kind of ranging from the major conferences to the smaller conferences a little bit. I'm going to start with this one because I think this is one of my favorite spots of the week here. Towson and Drexel in the CAA. We talked a lot about the CAA in the situational betting article. I wrote up a William and Mary and Charleston preview on Thursday. But Towson and Drexel. Towson is in a very bad spot here. One of my favorite situational plays of the week. Towson plays Thursday night against Delaware. Now they turn around, play 2 o'clock Eastern time in Philadelphia against the Dragons. Towson just played William & Mary, UNC Wilmington, who we've talked about on our segments with Kyle Hunter. They changed coaches. They've been a lot more engaged, a lot more focused, a lot more energized here of late. And then Towson also just played College of Charleston. So you play William & Mary, a very good team, College of Charleston, a very good team, and now you're in a little bit of a tricky travel spot against a Drexel team that's not great. They're not bad. They're not terrible. They're kind of middle of the road here in the CAA. You've got a really tough spot here, I think. I think this is one of those situations where Towson's probably a road favorite or a pick'em type situation. And this is something you can look at in these low major conferences. You know, a lot of times these teams aren't very deep. So if you play a lot of close emotional games against teams, and then all of a sudden you play a little bit of a flat spot, a little bit of a letdown spot, something like that, and that's what I think this is for Towson, I think you can find some really good values, some really good opportunities. So I like Drexel on Saturday in the CAA. I think they'll be getting, you know, maybe a point or two at home or a pick'em situation, something like that. I do like the Dragons here on Saturday. Another one I like, this one from, I guess we could call the MAC a mid-major conference, but Toledo is on the road at Bowling Green. And Bowling Green has been very, very good this season in the MAC. They had, you know, a historic winning streak. I think they won about 8 or 9 in a row. Longest winning streak for them in conference play in about 50 years. One of the games in that span that Bowling Green won was against Toledo. Bowling Green is coming off of a loss here, so that's a little bit concerning, losing on the road at Central Michigan. But Toledo wants revenge. That win for Bowling Green up in Toledo on January 25th, the first time that the Falcons have beaten the Rockets since 2011 in Toledo. First win over Toledo overall since 2017. So the Rockets are out for revenge here. And, you know, even though they've fallen off the pace a little bit, even though Bowling Green is the better team here in the MAC this season, you know, Toledo 3-7 in conference play, they need this game. They really need to start picking things up a little bit here in the back portion of conference play. And you've got this revenge factor. They lost that first game by 6 at home. You know, they didn't really do a whole lot in the second half of that one. I think this is a bounce back spot for them in a rivalry game. Bowling Green, with how they've played of late, will be laying a little bit of a decent number in this one. I like Toledo a lot to get that bounce back victory here over Bowling Green on Saturday. You've got Austin Peay and Belmont. You know, this is a spot I talked about the first time around. Belmont played at Murray State and then played at Austin Peay. They lost both of those games. Now this week, Belmont, and I don't know the result of the game against Murray State because I'm recording here on Thursday evening, but Belmont hosted Murray State on Thursday, now gets this revenge spot against Austin Peay at home. And generally speaking, Belmont's been the top dog in this conference. They've kind of gone head-to-head with Murray State for that distinction. There have been times where those teams have been talked about as possibly being worthy of at-large consideration. But Belmont has been that team here in the OVC. And Austin Peay is just kind of getting to that point here over the last couple of years. So I think this is a good spot for Belmont, win or lose on Thursday, to exact revenge. You know, they're going to want it after losing that first game. I think they're going to be really focused on this one. That's one where I definitely take a look here at the home team in Belmont. How about another small conference game here? Radford and High Point. Now, High Point is not a very good team. But as I wrote about in my situational article, situational spots can be equalizers. They can level the playing field a little bit. Radford plays Winthrop on Monday. And those are the two best teams here in this Big South Conference. Bradford lost at home in the first game to Winthrop 61-56. They've had this revenge spot circled against Winthrop since that first game. And again, when you talk about these low major conferences where there's one bid up for grabs, these marquee matchups really mean a lot. High Point lost by 11 at Radford in the first meeting. I don't think Radford is fully invested in this game. They've got that revenge game on deck against Winthrop, a game that they want with the way that this conference tournament is set up. That's one of those where home court advantage goes to the team with the better conference record. So you want to try and tie up that tiebreaker. You want to give yourself a really good spot to try and play the key games in this conference tournament at home. So that's a big one for Radford. I don't think they lose to High Point necessarily, but I don't know if they're fully invested here either. So I think High Point at home against a team that were competitive against the first time around, I think that's a pretty good look here for High Point down in the Big South Conference. Here's another one I'm kind of looking at here, another low major type of game. Montana and Idaho from the Big Sky Conference. You know, there's a couple of big rivalries here in this league, and maybe Montana against Eastern Washington has kind of become the premier rivalry because the Eagles have gotten better. But Montana and Weber State, those two teams do not like each other. They used to fight for that conference crown more often than not. Montana plays Idaho here on Saturday. They're going to be laying a big road number. Idaho is a very, very bad team. The game on deck for Montana is against Weber State. And that is a circled matchup for you. Again, you've got to keep in mind, we think about Duke versus North Carolina, Ohio State versus Michigan, Michigan and Michigan State, who do play on Saturday. You know, we think about these big rivalries in college basketball. We don't think about the low rivalries. The ones that really matter to these schools, really matter to these teams. Montana has Weber State. You think they're going to want to go out there and embarrass Idaho by a big margin? Maybe. But I think Idaho's got a puncher's chance here getting a big number at home in a game where I don't think Montana is going to be all that invested, all that interested in going out there and winning by margin. So I think there are a lot of games here on Saturday. Again, you can check out my situational article over at bangthebook.com. But I think there are a lot of games here on Saturday that really, really do mean something. Couple of games on Sunday as well, Butler and Marquette. I'm going to take Marquette in that game. Butler back out on the road off that big Villanova win. Marquette nearly beat Butler at Hinkle Fieldhouse in the previous meeting. They lost that game in overtime. I do it Marquette a little bit on Sunday. But again, you know, try to find these spots. Try to find these equalizers. They are something that can be really impactful for you over the course of the college basketball season. Finally, we'll finish up on the NHL side for my solo segment. Then we'll get back to college hoops with Greg Peterson in the next segment. But on Saturday, a lot of games in the NHL, we don't have any great situational spots like we did in previous weeks where, you know, especially last week coming off the bye where, I mean, that was just a gold mine for us. But there are some pretty good games to take a look at here on Saturday. One of them is Arizona at Boston. We talked about this on Tuesday with Brian Blessing that, you know, you fade teams in that first game back off of a long road trip and you buy teams starting a road trip. Arizona, one of them here, they're playing 4 in 6 days, but they start with this day game against Boston. And I have to think that Arizona, you know, probably going to be getting a pretty good price here, maybe in the plus 150, plus 160 range, something like that. It's a day game. It's a long way from home. The markets will price that in accordingly. But I think Arizona is going to be very invested to get off to a good start here in this game because, you know, they haven't played well of late. They didn't play well going into the All-Star break. They haven't played well coming out of the All-Star break. I think they put a lot of eggs in this basket here. And if we get a big enough underdog number, it's worth a shot or maybe a first period shot, something like that, to where Arizona probably going to come out very, very motivated against a Boston team that, you know, they play a lot of big conference games. They play Tampa Bay and Toronto and Washington and Pittsburgh. Those are the games that really get them going. Is this one against Arizona, the midday matinee game? They're going to be fully invested in this one. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be the case. So Arizona's one on Saturday that kind of intrigues me with a day game here. Also, Dallas and St. Louis is a pretty interesting one. A little bit concerned about the price tag for this game because St. Louis has been playing so well throughout the year. But, you know, Dallas, second or third place team there in the Central Division. They're kind of trying to catch up to the Blues. And Dallas has had a difficult season. They started out with some problems scoring goals. Then their coach had to resign. Then they had to start playing for a new guy. It's been a little bit of a tough year for them, but this is a 4-6 for Dallas off of a couple of back-to-backs. They play Minnesota on Friday night. The Blues, a lot of road games. They hosted the All-Star game, a lot of difficult spots for them here of late. But now they're back at home, settled back in a little bit. I think this is a good spot for the Blues. Again, I'm a little bit worried about the price tag for this one, but Arizona and St. Louis, a couple of the plays I do like here on Saturday. As we look ahead to Sunday here, Anaheim and Buffalo is kind of an interesting game. This is a 3 o'clock Eastern time puck drop here. It's a 4-6 for Anaheim, really more of a 4-5.5 with that afternoon start time. Same thing for the Sabres here, but they've spent most of the week at home. This is a good spot for Buffalo. And Buffalo's had a lot of good spots of late, but there are problems with this team. The players, once again, not getting along with management, not getting along with the coaching staff. There's a big disconnect here, again, with the Sabres. And this happened the last couple of years. They make the coaching change. Things still don't seem to be a whole hell of a lot better for Buffalo. So even though they're getting some good spots here, they haven't played well in them. And this one worries me, too. And again, you look at this from kind of a broad spectrum picture, looking way ahead as I do writing this article, Friday or Saturday for the following week. You kind of try to look at these spots from a long range standpoint. And once you get to the game, maybe they don't always line up. And to me, I think that's one here with Buffalo where it looks like they're in a very good spot against a West Coast team playing a 4-6 and early start time. But you still have to be able to trust the team that you want to back. And I think Buffalo right now, just not a team that I want to trust. So a cautionary tale to wrap up this portion of the show here. But again, great situational spots always written about over at bangthebook.com in those three articles. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this February 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with Greg Peterson of the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast, also of VSiN. Greg, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Adam. It feels like we just chatted, and ironically enough, we did on my podcast, Hooper with Hoops.
Yes, sir. We definitely did. We're doing a little bit of a home and home series here for our Friday editions of our shows. So thank you for having me on yours. I appreciate you coming on mine. And before we get into the college basketball stuff here, you and I talked last week. You wound up going out to Iowa for the Super Bowl. Definitely a change of scenery and something different outside of the Nevada sports betting markets. How'd that trip wind up for you?
It wound up being terrific. For one, if you've never been out to Iowa, there is a lot of great Midwest hospitality. The people there were first class and then some, so it was a very good operation. And I was really impressed by the book itself. With Catfish Bend, which is where I was at, they're a points bet affiliate. And it was sort of like a, I guess you could call it, mini version of a Las Vegas sports book. They had a couple of slot machines in there. They had a nice little bar area. They had pretty much a little bit of a triangle as well, because you have your main casino where you've got a little bit of everything, much more slots and everything like that. This was just like down a ramp. You walk down, you're able to go to the window, you're able to place some bets there. They have a couple kiosks. So everything was very nice. You had limited seating, but you had some seating along with a bunch of big giant TVs. I was very impressed by the setup. Like I said, not as big as Las Vegas, but it sort of gave you that Las Vegas feel in, I guess you could call it, a little bit of a less congested area.
So, I mean, obviously, it's the Super Bowl. I mean, it's the biggest single betting event of the year. And, you're used to what you see out there in Las Vegas as far as the prop catalog, the betting options, all that kind of thing. Was that pretty similar out there in Iowa?
It certainly was. Now, it certainly was not the Westgate where you could bet on, the shortest punt of Mr. Wisnowski or anything like that. But they had like 50 plus props out there. They had team to score first half line, second half lines, everything like that. Player prop for yardage. Will this guy score a touchdown or not? So it was pretty standard. Like I said, it's not going to be as extensive yet as some of these books that are just making hand over fist with money, but I did like the selection.
So what did you take away from, a state that's kind of in its infancy with sports betting there in Iowa? I mean, as you mentioned, it's a pretty good operation. It's a nice little area there at the retail sports book. But did you get a chance to talk to anybody about, how sports betting is going over, how Iowans are embracing it, anything like that?
I actually did. The general manager of Catfish Bend, Rob Higgins, was a person that joined my podcast. What he told me is that he is noticing newer and younger customers that are coming into his casinos. He told me that this has been very good for business, and that is exactly what he wanted to see, because with where I went to, Burlington, Iowa, it is right on the border of Illinois and Iowa. So typically he's going to do a little bit of business with places like Peoria. And if you know where that is, I do salute you. You're probably a Midwesterner. But with that said, just the fact that he is seeing more business and younger business with sports betting is very encouraging for other states to legalize it. He has been very happy with the turnout. He loves the way that the book is set up because, like I said, it's pretty much a mini version of a Las Vegas sports book. And he just, by and large, has been very impressed by things. And it, Iowa is a state in which does not have a professional sports team. And I thought it was very intriguing that, because we thought, hey, it's about four and a half hours away from Kansas City, it's all going to be Chiefs. That actually was not the case, because what we forgot about is that George Kittle, one of the stars of the San Francisco 49ers, he went to college in nearby Iowa, grew up in the area, and I actually saw on Super Bowl Sunday more 49er fans than Chiefs fans, something that I certainly did not think I would see.
So I know, correct me if I'm wrong, you were a 49ers fan for the game. You did like them a little bit in the Super Bowl. And as we all know, Kansas City does come away with the win and cover there. But other than that, on a personal level, how'd the Super Bowl go for you with props and whatnot?
The props were okay. I had a couple unders on Tyreek Hill. Needless to say, that third down play was bad because I had the San Francisco 49ers on the money line. I had Tyreek Hill under his yardage. If that play doesn't happen, I probably have a very, very profitable Super Bowl. Instead, it sort of went up in a little bit of a heap of smoke, but it's exactly why I say you never bet more than you can afford to lose. It was a little bit of a small loser, but with that said, had I went in larger, I would have been much, much more salty. I just placed a bunch of little bets just because I wanted to get the full Iowa betting experience, and the fact that I got free dinner also helped.
Yeah, it definitely does. And your college basketball season has been anything but a loser. You're having a very good year. Obviously, for people that know you, they know you bet every side in total for every game. People that don't know you, well, if they're listening to the show now, they know that. So you're very busy here on these massive college basketball Saturdays. That will be our focus here. But I always like to talk about a topic with you before we just get into specific game breakdowns. We've got a lot of rivalry games this weekend, and I will pick your brain about some of them specifically. But, Greg, as a general rule here, I mean, do you have any deviations from your usual process because it's a rivalry game?
Not really. It's one of these things where I look at every game on a game-by-game basis. I always have my base power rankings, and then I do play into the numbers, just what sort of a crowd that you could expect to get, because it's going to be a little bit more boisterous when you get something like a Duke versus North Carolina game as compared to, let's throw out there, a team that has not been in the ACC for very long, Louisville versus Duke. I mean, both teams, very passionate fan bases and everything like that, but there's just a little bit of extra juice whenever you get those rivals. I think a better example would be like Rutgers versus Maryland, a game that we saw a few days ago. Both these teams were not in the Big Ten a few years ago, and they wind up playing against each other. There's just not the same level of energy there as you're going to have for, like, say, Ohio State versus Michigan. So you do have to play that into account. But with that said, the numbers are really the numbers. It's not one of these games in which kids are going to take a game off because they're playing in a team that may not be an arch rival versus one that is one. So you put it in there a little bit, but with that said, you sort of have your evaluations and you try to see if these teams played a little bit before as well, because you always want to factor in, okay, did we have an outlier performance in the first game? Because now we're seeing a lot of return matchups as well.
Now, some of these rivalries, of course, geographic, some of them just because, you know, you develop a rival through conference play and, you know, through the team that is the one that gives you the most trouble, the biggest thorn in your side, or just the closest thing that you have to an equal. So we'll talk about a lot of different rivalry games here. And you mentioned the Big Ten, and let's go ahead and start with one of those. Very early tip-off here on Saturday. Michigan State and Michigan, as we know, Michigan at home once again with a rival, just lost to one of them on Tuesday in the Ohio State Buckeyes, who have similarly been struggling, much like Michigan has. What do you think about this one in Ann Arbor on Saturday?
I think that this is going to be a fascinating game, because keep in mind, last time these two teams played, Michigan went on the road. They got lambasted by double digits. I think that that was one of the first games in which they played without Isaiah Livers. I am thinking Isaiah Livers is going to be out for this one, but that is obviously a check and see situation, because it feels like half of Michigan's roster, let's be honest here, has been in and out of the fold. It makes it a little bit tougher for handicapping that team. But this is also a Michigan State team that I think we will both agree they have not been as successful on the road as they have been at home. Like, we were on this podcast last week talking about, oh, Michigan State really caught a break. Wisconsin no longer has Brad Davison in the game because he's suspended. Kobe King is transferred out. This really plays well for the Spartans. And then go figure, Xavier Tillman can't hit a layup, and they wind up losing to the Wisconsin Badgers, who were shorthanded. So I do think that this is a fascinating case. I do expect Michigan to be an underdog, and if they're an underdog of, I would say, 4 or more points, I certainly would be looking at them because I do sort of have my trepidations with them being on the money line. But if I would have a lean early on, it would be towards Michigan because we've been talking about this quite a bit on this podcast, my podcast. Everyone in just sports gambling is talking about just how hot the Big Ten home teams have been all year long.
Yeah, and again, we are recording this on Thursday evening, so we don't have any lines or anything like that that we can discuss. But how worried are you about Michigan State? I mean, we know the Big Ten is the best conference in the country, but that's largely because there are a lot of very good teams. And right now, I don't know if there's necessarily an elite team in this conference, but you know, I look up and down Michigan State's results, and I mean, they just don't force turnovers. They make it really, really difficult on themselves. Seems like that's holding them back quite a bit. Is this the best team in the Big Ten clearly to you, or are you worried about Sparty long-term?
That is a tough one because out there in the Big Ten, you could go with a lot of different teams. I hear people making the case for Illinois being the top team out there in the Big Ten. I think that that's a little bit far-fetched just because I don't know if the three-point shooting of the Illini is going to be able to carry them far enough to be able to win a Big Ten title. But with that said, I think that there are some trepidations with Michigan State, and you brought it up. This team ranks in the bottom 35 in all of college basketball with regards to turnovers forced per possession for their opponents. So I do think that that is something that you got to take a look at. And this is a team that's just really inconsistent with regards to their offense. You've got Cassius Winston. You know what you're going to get from him night to night. Sometimes he has a little bit of an off game, but who around Cassius Winston is really stepping up? Xavier Tillman, who I just mentioned, he had a badly off game against Wisconsin. That probably cost Michigan State a win, and if he's on his game, probably a cover, despite the fact that it was a multiple possession line in regards to the close. So I do think that this is a situation which you got to be taking a look at Michigan State. You got to think, okay, who's that guy that's going to step up? But you do have to keep this in mind as well. How many times haven't we seen Michigan State flailing around in early Big Ten play or even late in conference play? I still remember the final four run that they made in 2015. They wound up losing on their home floor out of conference to something by the name of Texas Southern out there in the SWAC. They wind up making their run. Tom Izzo is just a magician to get his team playing their best basketball at the right time. We saw it last year. So there is a little bit of this and a little bit of that, I guess you could say. So I have my worries with Michigan State, but at the same time, I believe that they have the best coach to get them ramped up at the right time in Tom Izzo.
We'll stay in the Big Ten here. We'll talk about Purdue at Indiana, and I don't know who pissed Purdue off the other night, but 104 points against Iowa.
Over 60 points in the first half.
Running away. Over 1.5 points per possession in that game for Purdue. Now they go on the road and take on Indiana, and Indiana's been very Jekyll and Hyde. I don't think we really know what we're going to get night in and night out. But with this being a rivalry game, we know we're getting the effort. We just don't know if they're going to be able to follow through, take down the win, or even cover the number. First of all, where do you think this number is going to be? And second of all, how do you kind of handicap this matchup?
Ooh, this is a little bit of a tough one. But this is just one of these situations where Purdue at home has been an absolute juggernaut. They have won over 60% of their games against the spread at home. They have just been absolutely lights out. We remember what they did a few weeks ago against Michigan State. Just completely destroyed them, winning that game by nearly 30. When Virginia hit the road and faced off against Purdue at West Lafayette, completely lambasted them. And then when they go on the road, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, Matt Harms' home and road splits, I invite anyone listening to take a look at them. They're one of the most demonstrative things I've ever seen in my life. This guy is probably a lottery pick at home. On the road, he looks like me at the YMCA. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that is this entire Purdue team. So it's one of these situations in which The way I'm looking at this game right now, Purdue at home, got to be looking at them. Purdue on the road, want absolutely no part of them. And then when you're taking a look at a total, I'm right now leaning towards the under, just because with Indiana, they started out as one of the top teams in all of college basketball with regards to offensive efficiency. When they entered into Christmas, they were in the top 20 with regards to points per possession scored. Ever since, I would say, the beginning of the new year, I believe that they have broken 70 points twice in regulation. I think that one of those was against Nebraska. Another one was that just massive outlier performance against Maryland, in which everyone was hitting threes left, right, and sideways. So this is a spot where the home team should be able to pull this one off, and at the same time, going to be looking at it under just with the way that Indiana has been playing overall.
All right, let's slide out to the SEC here for a minute. Take a look at Kentucky and Tennessee, another early tip-off here on Saturday. But Tennessee stops the bleeding a little bit, gets that one-point win over Alabama in a game where they were 2-for-18 from three. So maybe a little bit of some good feelings, I guess, for Tennessee to not shoot very well, still find a way to win the game. Kentucky, I mean, look, as a blue blood, they haven't been very impressive this season either. How do you sort of handicap this one in Knoxville on Saturday?
I've got to be taking a look at Kentucky in this spot, just because with Kentucky, you've got so many guys that do such a good job down low for this team. And keep in mind, the rough start that Kentucky got off to in the non-conference, a lot of that was due to injury. You had EJ Montgomery and Nate Sestina miss some time. When Nate Sestina came back, he made an immediate impact for this team. Those two guys, along with Nick Richards, combined for right around 19 to 20 rebounds per game. And this is a Tennessee bunch that ever since LeVon Turner got out of the fold, it's just been really interesting to gauge this team. They've been able to pull off a couple of covers, but with that said, the offense just has not been able to get out of neutral. You do have Santiago Viscovi, the gentleman that comes in from Uruguay. He's been able to give the team right around 9 to 10 points per game. He's able to bury a couple triples, but I just have absolutely no faith in this backcourt whatsoever. And for Kentucky, what you've got to like is the fact that Emmanuel Quickley has been able to step up, shooting 40% from three. The biggest kryptonite that I had with regards to the Wildcats this season was just the three-point shooting. He seems to be giving them some stabilization because Tyrese Maxey, after a hot start to the year, he wound up fading off, but Quickley has, I guess, for lack of a better term, Quickley been able to resolve that. I just think that this is a spot in which Kentucky is going to be a short favorite, and I would look to lay it here. I typically don't like taking short favorites, especially in conference games, but Kentucky has proven time and time again that they're able to do it. And I would argue that a few weeks ago, when John Calipari got thrown out of that game against Arkansas, was a rallying cry for this bunch, and they've been playing some inspired basketball ever since then.
It's kind of been a running joke on our show to sort of kick Rick Barnes around, dating back to his days at Texas, where, you know, some of his teams were okay, but, you know, a lot of early tournament exits. Last year, he does get Tennessee to the Sweet 16, but not a guy that we've had collectively a very high opinion of here on Bang the Book Radio. What do you think about Tennessee long term? I mean, you know, they really haven't gotten into any sort of run where they've played consistently well for any long period of time. I mean, Is this a team that's ticketed for the NIT?
I think this year they certainly are. I would say that the job overall that Rick Barnes has done over his entire tenure at Tennessee, he's been doing a very good job. Keep in mind, Tennessee, the previous 2 years when they had all of their players in there, Admiral Schofield and company, that was a homegrown bunch that wound up being able to make some Sweet 16s. They wound up being a top three seed in the NCAA tournament back-to-back years. So I'm very impressed with what Rick Barnes has done overall. And I did think that Tennessee was coming into the year with a little bit too much fanfare because, like I mentioned, they just had lost way too many pieces with LeVon Turner, their main point guard, being out of the fold. That just completely destroyed the team because we saw with him in the fold, this team was able to take down a Washington team. Speaking of a team that is currently dealing with some losses, that would be Washington, but they looked very impressive in that game. So I don't think that we could pin it all on Rick Barnes, but with that said, unless if Tennessee is able to pull off some big wins here towards the stretch run, they probably are looking at the three-letter tournament.
Well, you teased the Pac-12 a little bit there, so I think it's a good segue to go over and talk about that a little bit. They call it the Civil War on the football side. I don't know what they call it on the college basketball side, but
I used to work for the official affiliate of Oregon Athletics. It's just a Civil War.
All right, fair enough. So we got the Civil War on the hardwood here with Oregon and Oregon State, and Oregon State's lost 5 of 6. I mean, it's not that they've necessarily played bad in all of those games, but they haven't played particularly good either, in particular on the offensive side. What do you think this one looks like here with the Ducks coming to Corvallis?
I think that this is going to be a game in which I'm hoping that it's going to be a little bit of a shorter line because Oregon has been doing a good job of being able to get the job done in a lot of their games since that game against Colorado, which they just never win at Colorado. It's ever since Colorado joined the Pac-12 before it was the Pac-10, before they joined, they have never won a game at the CU Event Center. So I saw that coming. Now, the loss on the road against Washington State, that was a little bit of an eye-opener. It was the first top 10 win for Washington State since before the era of Klay Thompson, so that tells you that it had been a while. But with that said, what we've been noticing with Oregon is that they've just been laying a couple too many points on the road. And for Oregon State, this is a team that really likes depth. They're only going to go about six deep, but those six players are very good. You've got a guy like an Ethan Thompson. He's going to give you about 14 to 15 points per game, five assists, and then you got Trace Tinkle. The guy's a little bit of a matrix in that he fills up every stat of the box score, right around 20 points. He'll pull down seven rebounds, shoots 40% from three. He'll give you a block. He'll give you a steal. But what I think is going to be big for Oregon is just being able to drive into the painted area, because what Oregon State has is one of the top shot blockers among all Power 5 conference teams in Kyler Kelly. He's been able to give the team right around four blocks per game. If Oregon is able to find a way to drive inside, that means that they're going to open up lanes to be able to shoot those threes. And with Oregon, this is a top 25 team with regards to three-point shooting percentage. When we think Oregon, we typically think about that slow, grimy style that they were able to get to the Sweet 16 with last year. They've actually been kicking it up-tempo, has been one of the best over teams in all of college basketball. If Oregon is able to establish that tempo and they're able to get a couple drives to the rim, I think it's going to play very well for the Ducks team.
So Oregon here, I mean, they got a shot at a very nice road win, and we'll see if they wind up getting it. But right now, according to most of the metric sites that are out there, Oregon does trail Arizona and Colorado, and in some places by a relatively substantial margin in terms of their overall rank. Who is the best team in the Pac-12 to you?
I would still have to go with Oregon, and I just think that Arizona is a team that's a little bit too inconsistent. We saw it in the non-conference slate. They wind up losing to St. John's. They wind up losing to Baylor. They have their trouble on the road. Now, they fought admirably against Oregon when they went on the road, but that was still a game in which they just weren't able to close it out, and that has really been the issue for Arizona. They don't have that experience. Meanwhile, Oregon, they've got a point guard that has started in the Final Four in Peyton Pritchard. Feels like this guy has been on campus for forever, because I was working for Oregon Athletics a little bit over 3 years ago. He was the team's starting point guard back then. I mean, this guy is probably going for his doctorate at this point. He's been on campus for that long, but that's a good thing. And what I also think for Oregon is that they've got the best coach in all of college basketball, because John Beilein is no longer at the college level, in Dana Altman. Dana Altman just does a great job of getting his team to fire on all cylinders in March. We saw it when they made the Final Four a few years ago. We saw it when they made their Sweet 16 run last year. I still have to go with Oregon being the top team in this conference.
All right, so here's a rivalry game that, I don't know, people may have heard of, I guess, and this one's coming up here on Saturday. Duke and North Carolina. Maybe you've heard of this game, maybe you haven't. North Carolina does have Cole Anthony back now, so we would hope that they would start to look like a little bit of a different team. Obviously, the damage done at 10-12. They're not going to the NCAA tournament unless something absolutely insane happens. What about this weekend, though? You know, you can kind of save the season a little bit to a degree. It is a throwaway year, but you can kind of save it a little bit if you're able to take at least one of these games against Duke, but there'll be a big underdog here to do it this weekend.
Oh, yeah, and I'm probably going to be looking at the points here with North Carolina. I am expecting them to be a massive dog, and this is one of these games in which there's always just a little bit more juice for it. The players, they work for this all year long. And I will say this about North Carolina. They've went 0-2 ever since Cole Anthony has returned to the fold. But without Cole Anthony, those 10 or so games that he was out, team was giving up an average of about 74.5 to 75 points per game, give or take a little bit. With Cole Anthony in the fold, this team has not allowed more than 74 points all year long. They do a better job of being able to play on defense. Big reason why Cole Anthony is able to force about two steals per game. Trey Jones is pretty good with the ball, but he can sometimes have his turnover woes. We've got a Duke team as well that they don't have quite the talent that they did last year, just with regards to those starting three, because obviously when you got Zion Williamson, Cam Reddish, and RJ Barrett, that's a prolific trio. But I would actually argue that this team is a little bit better, because They're a little bit more of a cohesive unit. They had absolutely no bench last year. They had no three-point shooting. Coach K really didn't do a whole lot of in-game adjusting because he's like, all right, I've got the best three players out there on the floor. You guys just go take care of it. He realizes this year he doesn't have it. So he's getting guys like Matthew Hurt into these good situations. He's gotten the most out of Vernon Carey. I think that this is a much better job by Coach K with regards to coaching than it was last year. But with that said, I don't know if it's going to be enough to be able to cover a big spread here against North Carolina. I feel like this North Carolina team is rejuvenated. And one thing that has never left North Carolina is the fact that they do a good job down low. Garrison Brooks, Armando Bacot, these two guys are able to give the team quite a few rebounds. I think that as long as North Carolina is able to play even up on the glass, which I expect them to, they're going to be able to hold at bay.
Now, as I mentioned, a lot of these rivalries generally come about because these teams are close and you've got, you know, divided families, divided cities, all that kind of thing. This is a rivalry game. It's not because they're close. It's just because of the recent history between these two programs, Gonzaga and St. Mary's. And Gonzaga, I mean, look, they're not going to be tested much the rest of the way until they get to the NCAA tournament. BYU, probably the second best team in this league. They beat them by 23 at home. What do you think happens here when they go on the road to take on St. Mary's Saturday night?
I think this is going to be fascinating because you've got two of the top 15 teams in all of college basketball with regards to offensive efficiency. You've got a St. Mary's team that they look to play it actually a little bit slower, despite the fact that St. Mary's has been a good over team all year long. This is still a team that, with regards to a possessions per game standpoint, they're in the bottom 50 in the country. With Gonzaga, this is a team that they're able to play at warp speed if they want to. I think a big key for Gonzaga is, will Killian Tilly play in this game or not? He wound up getting hurt in the team's game against Santa Clara about a week and a half ago. He wound up missing the game against San Francisco on last Saturday as a result. This guy's a difference maker. At his full force, 2 years ago, he was able to shoot 48% from three. When you've got a guy that's at 6'10" and he's able to bury triples like that, that is a complete game changer. But even without him, you've got a guy in Ryan Woolrich, shoots 45% from three, does a good job with an assist to turnover ratio of three. And what I think is key for this St. Mary's team is just being able to get themselves going early, because if they go into chase mode, this is a team that they don't necessarily play very fast, and that is really going to put them behind the eight ball. And we see what Gonzaga is able to do when they get off to an early start. They're able to just completely destroy teams, and it's just one of these things of which you got to feel like St. Mary's is going to be a little bit juiced up for this game because they know how many times Gonzaga has taken them down. But keep in mind, last year, Gonzaga wound up losing in that West Coast tournament to St. Mary's, and I think that there's going to be a little bit of added juice with that as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask you, because I know we talked about revenge situations on your show, the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast. That's what I was going to ask you is, you know, do you feel like there's year-over-year carryover when you, you know, play against the team that knocked you out of your conference tournament?
Well, it has to depend. Like, for Kentucky, there's not going to be a whole lot of it because, well, nobody was there last year. So there's that along with Duke. But when you have a team like a Gonzaga, a bunch of guys that typically stay for multiple years, you've got a bunch of grizzled veterans. I know that they only have one starter that returns from last year, but got to think that that's going to be on their mind. And for St. Mary's, pretty much everyone is back from last year. So I think it's one of these depends on the situation sort of thing. With these mid-major teams, absolutely. With a team like Duke, not so much.
One more game I want to ask you about here, and this one comes from what I guess I'd call probably my favorite mid-major conference. Maybe it's a low-major conference. It depends on, I guess your view may vary, but the CAA, there are a lot of good teams in this league. I don't think there's a great team, but there are a lot of good teams, and a couple of those good teams meet here this weekend, Northeastern and Hofstra. And this is a fascinating game because Hofstra kind of caught a second wind here. They blew out William and Mary last Saturday, avenging a loss from earlier on in the season. Northeastern lost to Hofstra at home earlier on in the year. So you've got the home revenge factor here for Northeastern. Hofstra's playing better. Northeastern is not. What do you think about this game?
This is really interesting because you've got two teams that are there able to go bombs away from three-point range. Jordan Rowland got off to a ridiculous start this year. Still averaging about 22 points per game, but he's tailed off a little bit. What I think is going to be key is bold embrace down low for Northeastern. Can he match up with a guy like an Isaac Kanate who has a little bit more size? Kanate is able to give the team 7 rebounds per game. And then with Hofstra, Tariq Coburn, 7 rebounds per game. He's able to launch some threes. But what I really like about Hofstra is that They don't just have one or two guys that are able to shoot it from three. They've just got a whole bunch of guys. I mentioned Coburn. How about Eli Pemberton, 15 points per game? We've seen him take over a lot of these games. Hofstra, with regards to their road record, one of the best in all of college basketball over the last 2 years at being able to cover on the road at home. They have been a stalwart as well with Northeastern. They try to slow games down a little bit more. Hofstra, they try to speed them up. And Hofstra is often able to get their style because they just seem to be able to turn that on at any point. I remember watching a game with them playing Towson at the beginning of the new year. Towson was able to do a good job of holding them down early, but then you just saw Desir Boye, the point guard of this point guard, who shoots 42% from three-point range. He was able to go off, and this is a Hofstra team that they're able to put up 10 points on the board in a flash, and I think that that's a luxury that Northeastern does not have, and for that reason, I've got to be taking a look at the pride in this spot as they've really developed themselves over the last 2 years as, in my opinion, being the best team in this conference.
This is such an interesting conference, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure where these teams are going to fall from a bracketology standpoint, but I got to say, whichever team comes out of the CAA, I don't think I'm going to be real excited to play them if, you know, they are your 3-14 matchup or, you know, maybe if they happen to get a, you know, a 4-13, something like that. I don't think as a major conference team, I'd be excited to play any of the top teams in this conference.
No, not at all, because the tag team of William and Mary, when you bet on them, you don't just get one of them, you get both of them. But what else you get both of? How about Andy Van Vliet and Chris Knight? Two guys that stand 6'10" or greater. They both shoot in the mid to high 30s from three-point range, and they both pull in 9-plus rebounds per game. I think that they are one of just two duos in college basketball that both individually average 9-plus rebounds apiece. We went through Hofstra and all the three-point shooting that they have with Northeastern. You got Tyson Walker that's been able to step up for this team. You don't necessarily have a lot of size, but you've got a lot of three-point shooting. And heck, even Towson, Brian Fobbs is a guy that's able to give you 15.5 points per game. Dennis Tunsil, along with N.K. Sanders, both give you a little bit of facilitation. This is a team that has emerged, and they've been playing a little bit of better basketball. I'm right there with you. The CAA maybe isn't quite what the SoCon was last year, because I felt like the SoCon had a legitimate chance at multiple NCAA tournament bids, but much like the SoCon last year, they've got four very solid teams that if any of these four make the NCAA tournament, they're going to be a tough out.
And Grant Riller at Charleston's a pretty good player too. So
Grant Riller is a thriller.
There you go. A lot of talent in the CAA. Going to be a very exciting conference tournament, which, you know, conference tournament's now less than a month away. I think the first conference tournaments start March 3rd. So we're hitting the stretch run here of the college basketball regular season. And of course, no show does it better than the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast with Greg Peterson. You're also on VSiN pretty regularly. How can people find all your work, man?
And speaking of VSiN, I will be hosting the Green Zone from 2 to 6 p.m. Pacific. With regards to Eastern time, that is 5 to 9 on Saturday. So all of your college basketball action, in-game opportunities, what have you, I'll be following them all along there. And with regards to the Hoopin' with Hoop podcast, as you mentioned, I break down every single game, every single day. You're my guest on today's podcast, so that is a lot of fun talking about today's slates, what we've seen in conference and everything like that. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you find podcasts. You're able to get that, and the hub for everything that I do with regards to my podcast, my appearances on different radio shows, including your fine show, everything like that, at GUnit_81 on Twitter.
Always great to chat with Greg Peterson. Again, Hooping with Hoops is the podcast. VSiN is the network, at GUnit_81 on Twitter. Greg, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always love doing it. Thank you.
There you go. Once again, there's Greg Peterson from the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast at GUnit_81 on Twitter. Make sure you check him out this weekend on VSiN. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I think what I'm going to start doing here a little bit is I'm going to start working in some more of the bettors box. I'm going to start doing baseball on Mondays and Thursdays here with the first segments of the show. I think that's just going to be something that makes a lot of sense for me to kind of get some baseball stuff in there, give some of my guests a little bit of a break, because I know that the college football and the NFL seasons are very long. College basketball, very labor-intensive as well. So we're going to do some shorter segments with Kyle Hunter on Mondays the next couple of weeks probably as he recuperates and recovers. Then on Thursdays, you know, Brad Powers is, you know, it's going to be touch and go with his segments a little bit here. I know he needs a little bit of a break himself. So probably going to do some early bettors box stuff on Mondays and Thursdays with the show. So I'll do that to start Monday's show. Then I will do about a half hour with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com and BetterSportsPicks.com take a look at some college basketball games for next week. We won't be doing as in-depth of a segment with all of our regression metrics and stuff like that. Just taking a look at some games, getting Kyle kind of back up on the beam a little bit, get him back into doing some segments here. So that'll be our Monday show, the Bettors Box, to start things off with some MLB stuff. And then Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com to talk some college basketball. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again on Monday.